Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Podcast. My name is Zach. I'm here with Laura. This is our 300th episode, which is kind of exciting. I didn't quite realize it until this morning when I was getting set up. And so I want to thank you for coming along the whole time and just being with us and paying attention. Some of you have been here since the beginning. Others of you are brand new, so welcome. Hope you had a happy holiday, happy Christmas. This is our last episode of 2023, where we kind of, we reflect a little bit. We talk a little bit about the different ways that we teach a specific topic. We're talking about fondness and admiration and how important that is in a relationship. Coming up in 2024, we have a lot of very exciting interviews. I'm looking forward to that. We have a whole bunch of people already scheduled. And so we'll be sort of rolling those out through the spring for sure. And for now, I'll just say again, Happy New Year. And I hope that you and your family are well. Thank you again for listening to Marriage Therapy Radio. This is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
Sad we didn't catch that burp on air. That was a good one. Wait, hold on. I might have another. No, that's all I got.
Yeah.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Good. Are you wearing a turtleneck? No, it's a sweatshirt.
It's my sweater.
It's a sweater.
This is the sweater I had our pictures taken in.
Yeah, you look kind of fancy.
Yeah. It's my favorite day of the year.
Why?
December 21st is my favorite day of the year. So this will come out after that. But symbolically for me, it is like the day that I think, how can I start over? There's a church service that I go to on December 21st. It's called The Longest Night. And it's representative of like, this is the darkest day of the year. And the church service, I really like that it's built kind of differently than a lot of services that you might go to. It's more of a lamentation service. It's kind of more somber and not quite as rah-rah maybe as some services that you would go to.
A lot of people don't use that word, by the way, lamentation or to lament.
Yeah, no, they don't, but they know what it means.
Most people, I think, would know what it means. I know what it means because I grew up in the church, but it's a churchy word.
Yeah.
To lament or lamentations, yeah.
But, for a guy who struggles with, first of all, his relationship with the church, period, it's a nice, kind of alternative way to still be involved, but not have to, do the whole bit. Like, I actually don't really appreciate, say, Christmas Eve and Christmas service like some people do. Like, that's not the way my brain works. But then also a guy who sort of struggles with depression and secular depression in particular. The Longest Night is sort of representative of, okay, this is as bad as it gets. Like this is as dark as it gets this day, the 21st. And so for me, I can start to kind of go, okay, this is it. This is as bad as it gets. And tomorrow is a little bit brighter, particularly here in Seattle. Like you can tell tomorrow will be longer. There'll be more light tomorrow than the next day. You can start to tell just because of the way the sun moves in the sky. So I don't know. It's my favorite day. So I usually wear black all day. Like I usually wear black on this day. And it just
I'm also
symbolic.
Wearing black today.
Yeah. Hmm. It's just sort of symbolic for me. So I don't know. I like this day. It's my nephew's birthday, which is kind of cool. Happy birthday, Noah, who doesn't listen to the podcast. Although he has a girlfriend now. It's pretty cute.
Okay.
I think they're going to get married. Right. They're like 17,
I mean, it happens a lot. A lot of my clients have been with each other since high school.
I wanted to say one other thing about this season, even though it's technically after Christmas. Do you ever participate in this debate about whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie?
Never. I've never ever entered into
it. Do you have an opinion on it?
Does Laura Heck ever watch a movie from beginning to end? Other than Frozen.
No.
I saw Frozen a million times and I watched the whole thing.
No.
But no, I have never seen Die Hard.
Well, there's a there's an annual debate right about now about whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie. And I think it's funny because it, you know, but here's the thing. Do you know how, like, if you have to take a quiz or a survey to find out if you drink too much, that probably means that you drink too much?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, well, I'm going to take this quiz and see if I drink too much. The fact that you're taking the quiz means that you drink too much. This is how I feel about this debate about Die Hard. Like, the fact that we're talking about whether or not it's a Christmas movie makes it a Christmas movie in my mind.
Okay.
So
I don't understand, like, why is it a Christmas movie? Is it
takes place
setting,
at
like,
Christmas?
During...
Yeah,
okay, it then it's a Christmas movie.
Yeah, but the question is, does it have like a Christmas message? And it kind of does. But
okay.
But we watch it faithfully every year. We're watching it tonight.
It's... Your household is full of rituals, especially around movies.
Yeah.
I got nothing. I am excited to see the new Wonka movie that's coming out with, what's the guy's name? Like, it's a...
Timothy Chalamet.
Chalamet or something. Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet.
He's great. Chalamet.
He's not great. He's Timothy Chalamet. He's Timothy Chalamet
in
every single
movie. He's a great actor.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
What?
Okay. All right.
You don't think so?
Maybe we'll just disagree about what great actors are. Yeah, no, it's...
Really?
I think,
do you have
I think
a
Timothy
favorite
Chalamet
actor, by the way?
Probably. It's probably like Bob Odenkirk.
No idea who that is.
Yeah, because he disappears into every single role. Like, he's never Bob Odenkirk. He's always like the character. And that's what I like. But Timothy Chalamet is always Timothy Chalamet playing the character.
Well, he's the...
So is Jason Bateman. So is, what's her face? The lady, Melissa McCarthy. Melissa McCarthy is always Melissa McCarthy playing...
That's true.
...the character. That's how I feel about
Timothy
Chalamet.
But they're great in that role. Have you seen Call Me By Your Name?
Sure.
That was the where I discovered Timothy Chalamet. Okay.
No, I haven't
Watch
seen
Call Me By Your Name and
That's
then
the guy
tell
that
me
eats
what
people,
you think
right?
about him. Yes. Armie Hammer. Have we already talked about Armie Hammer on this podcast?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Oh, my
gosh.
We
might get sued for defamation if anybody... What?
Probably. Or slander.
Because we're so popular.
I wanted to tell you that I've been starting I'm sitting so awkwardly right now because my hip is very tight. I did not roll. I've started running in the mornings. So I've got my little lady pack and I have invited my girls to come out and run at 6 a.m. We meet at a coffee shop and then we start our run and we go for about 5 miles. And today's the solstice. So it was really dark and I've got my headlamp on and I have my like light up vest, but nothing will make you feel more like a badass runner than if you're getting up at 6 a.m. and you have to gear up to go for a run. It's pretty fun. So I just wanted to say that because I'm pumped on it. I'm creating some good habits. My running coach is really pumped on me not having to, I'm actually getting my runs in, which feels really good, but I'm training for marathons, which I've already mentioned, but I did see, by the way, that the donation page is up on our website, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is.
So thank you for putting that up.
Yeah, this is our task for 2024 is to raise money for something. What is it?
For NF and well, it's the NF Endurance. We're raising money for the Children's Tumor Foundation.
We'll get
is
more articulate
research.
About it in the future.
We will. But for now, just send your money. We would appreciate that. $5.
Well, if you're looking to make a year-end gift before December 31st for tax
that
purposes or something, and you love Marriage Therapy Radio and you love Laura and you want Holden to be healthy and safe, then that would be a good target. Go to marriagetherapyradio.com and contribute to Laura's NFT fund.
Yeah,
NFT,
thank
isn't
you.
That the thing that you buy like cartoon characters on the internet or something?
I have no
idea.
Yeah,
it's a whole
it's
thing. Like, yeah, but NFT is like another thing altogether that people get excited about. This is our last episode of 2024. This is also our 300th episode. 300.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It is a lot, and we have done a lot. If you've been listening for the last 6 years, you have definitely come on the journey with us. You have gotten to know us very well. I have clients now that are listening, and it always makes me feel so uncomfortable because I made a joke or something like, I got to go out and walk the dog. And they're like, we've been listening to the podcast. We know you love walking dogs. And I was like, shoot, you know me so well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a little bit weird, particularly for me if I start teaching and I'm like, well, if you're listening to the podcast, you probably already got this lesson, but if not, then here it is again. Like, so, and I still point back to number 262 all the time. 262 is the one that I invite people to listen to. It's about intentional conversations when we do the State of the Union. So if you're looking for like a greatest hits, particularly from 2024, that would be on the list, I think.
That's your favorite episode?
It's the one I recommend the most because it's the one that we recorded very specifically to help people do this one conversation. And it's the one conversation that when people do it, they report this went really well for us. This is working for us. So I thought, why don't we just put this in the universe? So yeah.
You know, if we were super intentional, like we were with 262, one thing that we could do is we could go back and we could highlight the episodes that we think are the best ones. Because sometimes we come on, we get really jazzed, and we have no idea where the conversation is going to go. Like I might say, Zach, I've got something really important I want to talk about, and we never get to it because Zach wants to tell me dad jokes. And then other times, I thought the last episode actually that we recorded was really, was great. Yeah. And we had no idea what we were going to talk about. So maybe what we should do is we should go back and review and see. Like I just sent a couple, episode number 4, which is on repair. It's the skydiving one. We were so much more intentional at the very beginning though. Remember?
Yeah, when we wanted to name all of them, how to blank, blank, blank.
How to.
Like, how to apologize.
Yeah, that
how
didn't
to repair,
last very long.
How to have sexy sex. I also think that... like there are interviews that I love that go back to. We did a bunch of interviews in January of 2024 that I thought were really cool, especially Emily Nagoski, who's coming back on next month, which is really exciting.
We have fun episodes coming up.
Yeah, we do. We have a whole bunch of interviews coming up that are cool. I'm excited about that.
Hey friends, it's Laura. I don't know about you. I mean, it's holiday season. I feel a little like my pocket strings are pretty tight right now. We've also had some shifts and changes with our employment status. There's a real reason for us to start to take a look at our finances and where we can cut costs. There's no better way than this app that I've been using. It's Rocket Money. Rocket Money is an amazing way to be able to monitor your finances. And here's the thing that I love most about it is that it helps me to take a look at my monthly subscriptions and cancel those unwanted subscriptions that you completely forgot about. I'm not even joking and I'm not proud at all to admit this. But my husband signed my son up for some kind of a gaming app. It was $4.99 a month 4 years ago. And he had it sent to an old email address. And so we never received these confirmations every month that this subscription was live. My son deleted it from his iPad and it just continued to bill us every month for the last 4 years, $5 a month. Thank goodness for Rocket Money because it showed up along with many other subscriptions that we needed to cancel. Just a way for us to tighten up our finances. So here's what Rocket Money is. It's a personal finance app. It finds and cancels the unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and it helps to lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and it's helped to save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. So stop wasting your money on things that you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/MTR. That's rocketmoney.com/MTR. rocketmoney.com/MTR.
I did have a question though.
What did you want to talk about?
Explore with you. I ever since we did the last training for the Gottman Institute, the 7 principles training, I've been kind of stuck on this one aha moment that I had, which was you teach principle number 2, which is sharing fondness and admiration. And I think I had this aha moment where I was like, we teach it really differently. I think we understand it differently. So I want to explore that a little bit. B, I always thought it was wrong. I thought the way you taught it was wrong. And then I was like, wait a second, it's not wrong. It might actually be better and right. Like it just was an aha moment. It's not that it was like wrong, but I definitely was like, oh, I get it. You know, sometimes like they say in general, you have to hear something 7 times before you get it. Like I almost had that experience. I was like, I see what she's doing. But I thought maybe it would be worth like just sort of like exploring here because
batting it around.
Yeah, because here's the deal. So the seven principles of making marriage work. We've talked about them ad nauseum here. I think we have another workshop coming up in February. So if you're looking for a year-end gift or a way to kick off your...
Oh, that's our workshop that we're doing?
Yeah, we're doing
you
one in February.
You and I are teaching it? Oh, yeah. Well, you register now. Great Christmas present for the
Except
people.
Except that this comes out after what? Christmas. But it's a great New Year's present. Say this.
That's
2024
true.
Is the year of reconnecting with our partner.
Yeah. There you go.
Anyway, principle number two is really about sharing fondness and admiration, which is inside of this bucket that we call enhancing the friendship, right? So you've got the friendship and then there's a whole bunch of stuff. And then we get to principle two and you take over. And do you want to talk about how you teach it?
Sure. Yeah. When I think about like sharing fondness and admiration, really what it's tapping into is basically like, how do you feel and think about your partner? Like when I think about Zach, do I have fond thoughts about you? Do I think about you? Do I tap into my admiration, my respect for you, my appreciation for you? Like overall, how do I think about you? And it has definitely evolved and changed. I mean, I'm going to slip back into like partnership, but when we first meet our partner, we're so infatuated with them.
That's
right. It's really easy to see all the lovely qualities that you appreciate and you adore and you admire in that person. A lot because it's limerence and that's where you're at when you first meet someone. But then I think we kind of become a little blind to all of those amazing qualities. And, you know, I think about like the way that other people see my husband. I have one girlfriend in particular who also listens to the podcast and she thinks my husband is fabulous and she's constantly singing his praises. And every once in a while, I kind of have to catch myself and be like, you're right. Like he is. An amazing dad. Like he is like a phenomenal friend. He is really charismatic, but I forget those things because I just kind of become a little, like, what do you call it? Like tone deaf to it or, what's the word I'm thinking of? It just kind of becomes part of the background of who he is and it doesn't stand out anymore. So there's not a lot of bright, shiny things that I find attractive or admirable. And so I think it's really important, one, to take a look at, in general, how do you think about your partner? Do you find that you slip into thinking about them in more negative terms, or do you think about them in more positive terms? And then also just recognize that you have the ability to change and shift your thinking about your partner and sort of like reignite or fan the flames of that fondness for your partner. And that's just a very intentional work that you have to do in yourself of choosing to focus on the positives, find the positives, scan your environment for the things that are going right and well in your partner, but also focusing on what are the qualities that maybe I just don't see anymore, but everybody else around me sees. And how can I focus on those things? So is that a good way of describing how I generally teach it?
Yeah. And then you tell this story about Ryan and you have kind of you go through the same sort of maybe 7 minute period of time where you have one lens on and then you show what it's like to put the other lens on. And it's a really good example, I think, of this thing that I'm constantly trying to get couples to do, which is change their perspectives. Like I spend all of this time. I realize more and more that I'm spending more time telling couples that tools are useless unless they change their mindset, like that all the skills, all the books, all the resources, all the workshops, unless they change their mindset, they won't work. Like if I'm using the skills, but I'm using them with someone that I have contempt for, it's really just a game that I'm playing. But if I'm using the skills and I'm like, no, I'm actually have hope for this person,
right?
Or this relationship, then it changes it. Same tool, effective or not effective, based on that notion. Oh, look at the balloons.
That's kind of fun. You just did like your little...
Yeah. Mac has a new feature. Apple's have a new feature where if you do hand signals on your Zoom meetings or your video meetings, there it is again.
I think it's that.
There's a bubble. Yeah. I got this guy going on.
Yeah.
Oh, those are balloons
again.
Okay,
I want to go back to this
idea.
Wait.
I'm going to give you some more. One thing.
You can do that and I can talk at the same time. You're making our producer work for it today. But you mentioned contempt, which is important because the antidote to contempt is a culture of appreciation in that relationship. It's working on actively falling in love with your partner and who they are as a person, and almost like, I wouldn't say ruminating, but, you know, like being super intentional about almost like, the word's not coming to me, like meditating on just all the positive qualities about your partner. You have a famous thing that you told me, and I tell my clients, like, I can't believe that this actually worked, which is I got into an argument with my husband and I had to leave mid-argument, and I was real fired up and upset with him. And I had to get to where I was going, a meeting or whatever. And I get into the vehicle and I'm sitting there and I'm just like, man, that asshole just really pissed off. And then I had you popping into my head, basically saying, spend this time thinking about all the positive qualities about your partner. And I just thought that was a load of crap. I was like, there's no way I can tap into that fondness and appreciation while I'm fired up and upset with my husband. And I think I'm right. Right. And so for 20 minutes, I was like, fine, Zach, I'm going to do it. And within that 20 minute drive, I parked my vehicle at my final destination, and I had spent the entire drive thinking about all, and it wasn't, I actually had to tap into what are all the positive qualities other people see in my husband, because at that point I wasn't able to tap into what I found to be true and right about him because I was upset. Yeah. So I was like, well, what are the things that other people say are really lovely and wonderful about my husband and are really attractive qualities? And after that, I was like, wow, I'm such a lucky gal. That was a stupid fight. I should probably call and apologize. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I think the thing that you're referring to that maybe is the famous part is that I think that when you intentionally think about positive things, you sort of choke out the opportunity to think about negative things. It's almost like you suffocate mm-hmm. that thing, the negative stuff. And it's almost like you got to take it out of the air. Take the air out of the room by filling it with something that is just a little more optimistic. And it's not so much that you're like deceiving yourself. It's just that you're posturing yourself to then do the work that you may need to do, which is ask for an apology or repair or offer the apology. But if you're staying in the, this person is a problem mindset, it's just not going to be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that the way you teach it, it really is like the foundational piece that's really core. It's different from the way that I generally teach it in this way, which is I really focus on the verb. Sharing fondness and admiration is the verb in the principle. So sharing, right? How do you actually and proactively go after filling your partner's emotional bank account? So, you know, the way that the story that I always tell, and you've heard it a million times, is about the time that Rebecca met me at a restaurant on Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And she walked into the restaurant and I was looking cute or whatever. And she said, oh my gosh, you're so handsome. Or she really liked my outfit. And then a little bit later, she said, oh, by the way, thanks for cleaning off the roof before you left. I know that's a pain in the butt for you, but it looks great. And I'm really glad we got it done before the rains came. I remember all four of those little phrases. And because I had been gone, I left the house Saturday morning and this was Sunday night. So I hadn't seen her for a couple of days. And so complimented me. Then she thanked me. And the way I always describe it is it was like the first time she complimented me, it was like she gave me $5. And when she thanked me, it was like she gave me $20. And so understanding that value, the value of like the incoming kind of credits that I received, was really powerful for me. And I told her, I said, hey, just so you know, if you want to get a 4-to-1 investment or return on your investment, thank me before you compliment me. Like, so, and then I always say, Rebecca's one of these people who doesn't want to thank you for stuff you're supposed to do anyway. She's sort of stingy with
gratitude.
I totally
had that conversation this week. Yeah.
And it's just the way she grew up. And she just like, why would I thank you for like stuff that is just normal? And I was like, well, in this case, because it goes really far for me, because it mm-hmm. really does like, it really does fill up my emotional bank account. So she started to learn how to thank me. She started thanking me for stuff I was going to do anyway. And so I got two things, right? I got the $20 all the time, but then I also got this like compound interest almost, like this evidence that my partner loved me by proactively doing something she didn't want to do in order to make me feel. So that's the basis of my sharing fondness and admiration lesson.
I have a question.
You got to find out how to. You're interrupting me now. I hope we get a bunch of Apple comments as one star because Laura interrupts Zach all the time. No, go for it.
Let me. Okay. You said something which I thought was really interesting is if Rebecca does something for you, like compliments you or thanks you for something that in her mind, she just thinks that's just something you should be doing. And you know that she's kind of going out of her way to verbally acknowledge you. Does that mean more? I had this debate with couples. 100%
where I was to me,
like,
anyway.
If you know, it does. Okay. Because it's like, if I know my husband doesn't want to go to church, but he gets up in the morning and goes, aren't we going to church this morning? I'm all ready to go. Aren't we going? And I'm like, really? Okay. Sure. Let's do that. I have that debate with partners all the time. And a lot of it has to do with like chores and sexuality around that area of like, well, if you know your husband or let's say like, you know, your wife doesn't like to give you blowjobs, but I should probably have warned people before I said BJ, but she does it anyway. Does it mean more to you that she's doing something that she is strictly for your pleasure? And so that was just a debate, a question that I had out to my clients this week, whether or not it lands more.
Yeah, I mean, that question goes back to even what we were talking about before. Like, if she does it out of resentment, like, or out of like, ugh, I can't believe I have to do this, you know, for you, versus I don't really like this, but I'm going to do it for you because you have made it clear that this is a way that you feel good or feel pleasure, even if it's thank you or, you know, some kind of sexual behavior.
Sure.
Like, I think there's something about learning how to do something you don't want to do on behalf of the relationship that is a sign of love. You know, and that's different, of course, than like a sign of, say, submission or a sign of, say, maybe that's the word I'm looking for, because obviously you can sort of feel you can acquiesce out of fear or acquiesce out of, you know, manipulation or something. But when it's like, no,
out
okay,
of desire.
I heard you. Yeah, out of desire. Like, desire is different than demand.
Yeah.
Right. And so when. I don't know. Sex is a difficult one because it's so wrapped up in kind of our bodies and our souls and our minds. But the way sometimes when I'm telling the story, I'll talk about sex, or I'll talk about a back rub, and I'll say, if your partner's giving you a back rub and they say, ooh, right there, deeper. Yes. What you do is you stay there and you go deeper, you know, and it's the same way of sex, faster, slower, right there. Good and responsive lovers do the thing that makes their partner feel good. You know, even if I'm just scratching your back, lower, lower, right. Yeah. Okay. Like, if I just was ignoring you and just staying up on your shoulders and just like giving you a nice little shoulder rub, it's actually a little bit of an insult. No, I don't want to love you that way. I'm going to love you my way. And I hope that works for you. So when I'm talking about sharing fondness and admiration, I'm talking about finding out where does your partner feel love, and then can you proactively share that, like, generously, like, because again, I'm a verb, in this case I'm a verb guy, so in your case you're kind of a fondness and admiration, you're sort of on the subject part. I'm gonna get in trouble if I start going grammar, but like, you're sort of focusing on the fondness and admiration part and I'm focusing on the share part, and I think they both have like real merit.
Yeah. When we eventually get to the idea of talking about, which is one of the next principles, about the emotional bank account. And it's kind of like talking about the deposits, which is where I think you are getting at, which is when you compliment me, it's like $5. When you affirm me or appreciate me, it's like $20. And we're talking about the putting deposits in the emotional bank account, speaking your partner's love language, which is very different from the way that I teach it, which is, hey, you got a contempt problem in this relationship, or you find it difficult to find your partner attractive, or sometimes you feel like, yeah, I'm committed and I love my partner, but sometimes I don't always like them.
Yeah.
That's something I can work with. There is a way that you can shift the feelings that you have towards your partner by focusing on those wonderful qualities that they have, but you just haven't been looking for them because you've been so focused on seeing the negatives, or you've just turned a blind eye to them, or you expect these things to always be true about your partner. And they were exciting and lovely and wonderful when you first met them, but now it's boring.
Yeah.
It's expected.
Well,
yeah, we do
teach
it very differently.
Yeah. You just reminded me of like another sort of Christmas movie. Love Actually. Do you watch this movie, Love Actually? Maybe not.
Describe the premise and who's in it.
It's like seven different stories that all come together at one point. It's got like You know, Liam Neeson's in it, and Colin Firth is in it, and Emma Thompson's in it, and I think Alan Rickman maybe.
Nope.
But there's like seven different stories that kind of all come together at the end, and one of them is this this guy Colin Firth. He's a writer, and he goes out to the countryside to write his book. And there's a Portuguese like housekeeper that's there, kind of keeping track of the house while he's there. And sure. They don't speak the same language. He speaks English, she speaks Portuguese, and so they're slowly falling in love, right? They're sort of falling for each other as they kind of sort it all out. And then he finishes his book, and he has to go away, and they're sad because they go to the airport. She's like, "Oh, I'm never going to see you again." Well, spoiler alert: what happens at the end is he finds her, and he walks into this Portuguese restaurant, and he professes his love for her, and he asks her to marry him in Portuguese. So he has learned. He murders it. He mauls the language. It's so bad. but this is exactly what I'm talking about. It's not that he perfected the language. It's that he tried to learn it.
Tried.
And that's why we all go, oh, it's so sweet. And she's up there, and she answers the proposal in English. So she's been secretly learning English. He's been secretly learning Portuguese. They come back together. And while they're not good at it, they've demonstrated to each other, "I'm interested in speaking your language." So when I get into a love languages conversation with people and they're talking about, "Oh, well, physical touch is not my thing. It's not really my language." I go, you might have to learn it in order to communicate with your partner in a way that works for them. Like, it's not strictly about loving people the way that you like to love people. It is about learning how your partner wants to be loved and loving them in that way.
I just had this conversation, who was it, with a girlfriend where it's like, "What are you guys doing for the holidays?" Oh, this was last night. And she goes, big eye roll. She said, "You see all those boxes at the door? Like, the delivery man came and there's all these boxes." She goes, "Those are all for my husband." I was like, "Wow, that's amazing. You went all out." She goes, "I have to." And so I was like, "Oh, really?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah, he is a holiday fanatic. Like, he wants all the presents. He wants all the gifts. He wants like the big meal with everybody's coming over." She goes, "We have like 9 entrees for Christmas dinner." And in that moment, what I realized is that she might be a little resentful, but she knows how to stroke her husband. She knows how to build him up and make him feel loved, is that she goes all out. It's not her preferred love language. And I know that in years past, I have grumbled about buying gifts because I don't love to buy gifts. But if I have someone who really gets lit up by gift giving, I want to give them gifts. I just want to light them up. So, which, by the way, I got really excited about my brother, a really great Christmas present, and I'm really excited to send it to him. Yay!
Yeah, right on.
But learning to speak somebody's love language, do you know what your love language is? I don't think I know what yours is.
Thing about love language is, like, I think that there's famously 5 love languages, but there's probably 500. There's probably 500 love languages. So if you take words of affirmation, for example, I like words of affirmation, but I prefer gratitude to compliments. So I also like physical touch, but I really love you rubbing my feet way more than rubbing my back or my shoulders. Or, also like, I'm not really a hug guy, but I do like it when Rebecca like puts her hand on the back of my head in the car. So I think it's like, this is where I think paying attention to your body and paying attention to yourself and giving that information away is really valuable, you know? Again, in the same way that you would here on the negative side, if you're having sex or if you're getting a back rub and you go, ow, your partner should stop doing that thing, right?
Yeah.
And I think in the same token, if you go, "Hey, I don't really like it when you compliment me, maybe because I feel objectified or maybe because I feel like, all you're trying to do is it doesn't feel sincere." That's like saying, ow. And you don't have to go, "Well, fine.
Right.
I was just trying to be nice." You just go, "Okay, I won't do that," you know? So yeah, I think that there's a lot to mess around with there, but it is kind of a mindset thing. And it's also just like I'm always encouraging clients to like, go ahead and inventory what makes you feel good. Tell your partner, "This is $5.
Yeah.
This is $1. This is $20. This is -$3. This is -$20. This is $100. You know? And then go ahead and to leverage that investment advice.
Well, that's smart. I was just thinking about the one thing which you said if your partner does something and you're like, ow, it made me think about giving direct feedback to your partner, just constantly sharing feedback and information back and forth of like, here's how to best love me. Here's how to not piss me off. And I have a lot of conflict avoidant couples that are not giving feedback at all because those conversations don't go well. And one thing that I've had couples doing is getting in the habit of just first and foremost thanking their partner for the feedback. And then you can respond. But what an interesting place to start, rather than getting defensive, rather than reacting and escalating. If your partner comes to you and says, hey, I don't love it that you don't put the toilet seat down, or I don't love it that you shave your, you know, your beard in the sink and don't rinse the shavings down.
I don't love it when you put my pans in the dishwasher.
I don't love that.
I think I'm getting pants for Christmas.
Did you see that on our Instagram post? It was like, what's on your Christmas list? And it said something like an NF2 donation to the Children's Tumor Foundation. And then the other one was like new pots and pans. Yeah.
I think I'm getting new pans.
But new pots and pans is on the list too.
This is my prediction, because I think she's like doubling down on putting my old crappy pans in the dishwasher in order to set me up for the new pans that are coming on Christmas Day.
I wonder if we could get sponsored by, there is... Actually, let's see if we can get a sponsorship for new pans. If you don't get them for Christmas, I will see if we can get a sponsorship for new pans. By the way, I've been taking an inventory of people, and I say BOTH. How do you say it? Turns out both. I'm the only one that says both with an L. Yeah, it's
the only
both.
One puts an L
I'm
in
gonna
it.
I'm gonna change it. Yeah, I'm the only. It's weird. BOTH. Why don't you say both?
Why don't you have an L in
it? Let's land this plane.
I don't know. 300. Happy New Year.
Thanks for sticking this out. We almost quit several times thanks to me, but we're not doing it. We're still going strong.
Yeah, right on. And we'll see you in the 2024.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. Thank you to our sponsor, Rocket Money, who continues to tell me that I've spent a lot of money this holiday season. And thank you for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.